Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. I'm glad you joined me this morning. It's Friday. We made it through a whole other week. Isn't that always nice? And no worse the wear, you might say. I'm glad people join me on Friday because it gives you an opportunity, if you can't listen the rest of the week, to hear everything that we talked about during the week. It's our recap day. And we had a good week this week. We had a lot of interesting subjects. We had a great guest, Raphael, and it was a good show. Monday, we talked about the young men that I don't read anything about or hear anything about that talked the 15-year-old autistic boy into taking the ALS challenge. And they videoed pouring human waste over his head with the inclusion of cigarette butts. Horrible. I mean, you know, beyond horrible. But it reminded me of something that happened in the 50s, which is another reminder of things change, but they don't change a lot. And we think it can't get any worse, and sometimes it does. But when I was like 7, my cousin, who I was very, very close to, he and all the neighborhood boys were building a fort in the woods where there was a creek. We'd swim there. It was a great place to grow up. And a big log was across the creek so that we could sit on the log, jump off the log into the water. It was awesome. So all these boys, and there was lots of downed trees. I don't know the reason for it. I was pretty young, didn't ask, thought all woods looked like that. And these boys got cutting up with their dad's handsaws pieces of wood and built a cabin, some of these older boys. Well, my cousin was 8. And they caught him in their fort, I guess they called it back in those days, and told him he could be a part of the group. And then proceeded to give him a bottle of Coca-Cola that they urinated in. Made him very sick. And when he told my uncle went crazy. And went to the parents of all the houses. And, of course, all the kids got in trouble. I guess the reason I'm sharing this is because no police were involved. No media was involved. My Uncle Bob went around to each of the families, told the mother and father of each one of those, I think there was like 6 boys, told them all what their sons had done, and the parents were appalled. I remember talking about this with my Uncle Bob and my Aunt Ann in years later when I was an adult because it bothered me all those years to remember that. And that's what they did. They, all those parents punished the kids themselves. And nobody was allowed in the woods forever. They made them tear down the fort. I mean, there was a lot of punishment that was dumped on all those boys. And I think they learned their lesson. In later years, my cousin was friends with all those boys. It's amazing how you think you have more help in this day and age with all the assistance out there, and actually sometimes we make it worse. So I'm going to bring Shell in so that we can go on talking about this week in review. Good morning, honey. How are you?
Good morning, Rainey. Yeah, I like the point you just made, and I agree with you, because there's a lot of things that happen today that really aren't a sign of the times, that have happened before in history, that have been happening for decades, in some cases hundreds of years. And the difference is media inclusion, Facebook, People are now taking incidences, and instead of handling it, you said it was your uncle who had went around to the other parents?
Yep, my cousin's dad. Mm-hmm. They had eight children, my Uncle Bob and Ann, eight kids.
Right.
Yeah, Mike was the oldest. Mm-hmm.
Right. So instead of, the uncle went around, took care of it, and each parent took responsibility and took care of it, you know. But what you have happening today is you have people that they're almost afraid of confronting people. So they'll go on Facebook and make disparaging comments instead of facing off with the parents, or they'll go to the authorities. You know, well, now if you go to the parents and the parents flip you off, then you go to the authorities. But people don't try to resolve things anymore, and it's a sad state of affairs. Or if a parent goes to another parent and says, look, your child did this, I need something taken care of, instead of the parent getting appalled and saying, I am going to take care of this, they get defensive over the child and they start making excuses. You know, oh, well, it's just boys being boys, you know, nonsense like that. You know, I hear that all the time on these judge shows I watch. Parents, instead of taking responsibility for what their kids do and taking it as an opportunity to teach the kid a life lesson, they stand there and they defend the kid, which sends a completely wrong message to their own child, you know, because, my parents are going to, tolerate what I do no matter what it is. And it doesn't teach them, you know. It teaches the child nothing. It teaches them how to use the system to try and get away with things. And it what it does is it further victimizes both sides, you know. It even victimizes the family of the perpetrator, because you know that that's going to keep escalating then. And they're going to keep pushing the envelope until somebody sets a limit for them. And I think that's one of the big issues with society today is we're pushing limits too much. People aren't drawing a line anymore and saying, okay, this behavior is acceptable, but if you cross over this line, it's no longer acceptable. We've smudged that line so much now that even parents sometimes aren't even recognizing when behavior of their kids is unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. Well, and don't you think, too, that it's all in the delivery? I think there was, back in the day, I think there was a little bit more, we allowed ourselves some empathy for the plight of the other parent, because next time it could be us that's answering the door. So my guess is my Uncle Bob he was very angry because he was afraid that my cousin could have been hurt some way physically by what they did, and didn't know what the repercussions were going to be in a few days after having swallowed all that. So there was a little bit of fear involved too. But I would imagine, knowing him, he was my dad's older brother. And again, like I said, he had eight children, so he had the patience of Job. So I can imagine that he went in and said, look, this is what happened. I know you want to do something about it, because I know if Mike had been a part of the guys that fed this to somebody else, I'd be very angry. Instead of saying, what are you going to do about your kid? This is what he did to my kid. I want him, instead of doing it like that, he went as a concerned parent, because he was kind of perusing the future of boys who would be capable of doing this. And part of him, I believe, was probably concerned about who they were going to grow up to be, instead of just thinking about, the what they did and wanting to punish them. He was concerned about their welfare as well, because he knew that it wasn't normal or okay for them to do something like that. So a lot of it has to do with the attitude, and a lot of it has to do with how you approach something that's going to be uncomfortable for both of you. But if you can do something like that, if you can talk to another parent or a friend or a coworker because of something that they've done, and you think to yourself, geez, next time they could do that to me, and I really like her or I really like him, I'm going to go say, that was really, not nice. Did you think about what you were doing? I don't think that was the right thing for you to do. There's a different way to approach things like that, instead of, because so far, I can't find any redeeming reasons as to why boys would do that. And 15 is a lot older than this group of boys was. These boys, if Mike was 8, I'm going to say these boys were like 12 and 13, that arena of age. But, you know, that was the age of some of the boys that hurt Michael.
Right.
So
right.
One
of the
say
things
that again,
is,
honey.
Yeah, I said there's actually two issues here. One of the things is that this whole, like, peeing in the Coke and feeding it to him, I mean, that is a college prank. It sounds sick, but it is a college prank. And I think it's mostly among the guys. I don't know if I've ever heard of a girl doing it. But, like, you know, if college
guys... It would be
guys,
hard for us to do it.
If one guy gets really sloshed drunk, all the other guys will pee in his beer bottle and put it back in the fridge and wait for him to take it, and then they all, like, you know, they all laugh when he starts drinking. He's so drunk he doesn't even realize he's not drinking beer anymore, you know. I mean, that's been like it's disgusting and sick, but that is kind of like an old college prank, and it's, you know, and people hear about it and talk about it and think it's funny. So these kids might have heard somebody talking about that, so thought it was funny to do. So it's not just coming out of nowhere, like in their sick imaginations or something, but they're taking it to a level that where, you know, this kid wasn't drunk. It wasn't a college, not that that makes it any better, but, you know, it was mean-spirited, where when they do it in the college, they're doing it just because they're all sitting around all blitzed out of their minds and nobody's thinking straight. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it is kind of a difference. But I'd have heard those stories and decided to play it out in their own arena. And the other thing is that what you were saying about about your uncle going and, you know, being reasonable and the way he approached the parents, that is part of having appropriate social skills. All right? And a lot of parents today aren't mature enough to have social skills. And they act, here they are in their 30s or 40s, but they're acting like a petulant young child where they get angry. You know, they don't approach another parent in a mature manner. They approach them like an angry child that didn't get their way over something. And this is something that people really have to look at. We've lost our sense of decorum. We've lost our sense of decency and maturity of how to deal with situations. Just because something happened to you that you don't like doesn't mean you have to scream at the person that you think is the perpetrator. You can still approach them with some level of respect, because even if they made this mistake, how do you know that they haven't done 100 wonderful things in their life, you know, outside of this one mistake? And you're going to talk to them like they're a horrible human being because they did something that got into your, you know, into your little part of the world and now you're aware of it, you know? So that's one of the things that people make a big mistake with. Just because somebody has come into your experience and made a mistake that affected you negatively doesn't mean that they're a bad person. It's just that single incident you're judging them on. And if you approach them with the level of respect saying, hey, look, I'm assuming you're a good person, but you did this one dopey thing here, you know, and how are we going to fix it? You're going to get a lot more out of them than if you approach them like you're judging them based on that one thing they did that affected you negatively, and now you're ripping them apart. Because then what happens is, instead of the person being compassionate and feeling bad and feeling compelled to straighten things out with you, now because you've approached them so aggressively, now they're in defense mode and they're digging their heels in and they're trying to defend themselves, so they never go into that remorseful mode. You're actually preventing them from becoming remorseful, because now you're attacking them so aggressively that they're going into defense and they never get to that remorse or to the responsible side. So the way you approach people, and I'm glad you said that at the beginning of this, the way you approach people is really going to dictate what kind of response you get back from them, whether
right.
you're going to fire responsibility and remorse, or whether or not you're going to make them angry at you for being angry at them. And sometimes, as stupid as it sounds, that's what happens, because we approach people too aggressively, and then all they hear is how you're approaching them, and they're not listening to what you're saying to them anymore because of your delivery.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what is it at the end of the day? What did he do? He lived by the golden rule, is what he did. He
exactly.
He approached those parents like he preferred to be approached in case, eight kids, I'm sure, there were many times somebody knocked on his door. And I remember those kids, loved them all, but, I mean, you know, they were kids. And so it is what it is. And I think that in a lot of cases, living by the golden rule carries on through the duration of our lives, treating other people the way you want them to treat you. And that's how Uncle Bob did it. He went in and knew that next time it could be him, somebody knocking on the door because one of his kids did something that he never got a chance to talk to them about or told them it wasn't a good idea to do. And so he had a little empathy for those parents. So I do think that attitude and our behavior, I mean, you see it on TV all the time. Somebody does something and immediately, in an effort to love the person that you're concerned about, fight for the person you're concerned about, you immediately go after, in some cases, the victim because
yeah.
you're trying to protect, you know, your family member, your child, your husband, your sister, whoever it is. Instead of stepping back for a minute and analyzing what has really happened and recognizing the wrong from the right and addressing it as such. I do think there's a lot to be said. When we talk so much about social behavior, Shelley, you and I both know at least in the hundreds of adults who don't have very good social behavior, don't we?
That's true, yes. Yes, we do.
So it is about teaching it at a young age. It is about understanding that there's no way you can always be aggressive and always have everything be right for you. That's not going to happen. Izzy tells us that in the workbook time and time and time again. And yet it's what we want, so it's what we think we should have. But if we're not dishing it out, being kinder to others and thinking of how if I walk into this happened to me the other day, so this is why it's on my mind. I walked into a grocery store. There was one cart in the grocery store, and in behind me comes this old lady. Well, I'm an old lady, but she was even older than me, and I pushed the cart to her and gave her the cart. I thought she was going to cry. She
Aww.
Says, you don't have to do that, honey. She says, I'll go find. I said, oh, for heaven's sakes, you're so cute and petite. I need the exercise a lot more than you do. And I walked out to get another cart. But I thought to myself, you know, on a lot of circumstances, I would walk in and I'd be really angry that I had to go look for another cart. You know, it would just annoy me because I'm already busy and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. Now I got to go search a cart. But that day, I felt good about doing that. That was good for me. It was nice for me to do it for her, made her day more than likely, but it was also good for me.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I just think we don't think enough of that. We want to be the winner all the time. We want to be the first one to get the cart.
Yeah.
You know, we want to be and turn around and smile and say, ha-ha, I got here first, right? And I didn't do that day, and it was good for me, and I hope it was good for the lady. So,
like I was at the DMV, I was, you know, it was just packed. It was, I had to renew my driver's license.
Oh, I know, it's been terrible lately. Mm-hmm.
And, I lucked out because they told me that it was going to be up to a four-hour wait, and I was like, well, I have no choice, you know, because I got to get this done. And so I said, I'll have to wait. And I was only there a little over an hour. So I was thrilled. I was watching the numbers just, you know, just advance very quickly. So I was like, wow, there's no way I'm going to be here even maybe 2 hours. And it wasn't. It was like maybe an hour and 10 minutes. So I really lucked out. But while I was sitting there, and it was packed. I mean, it was standing room only. And this little old lady came in, and she goes to sit down. And this little twippy blonde girl looked at her and she goes, there's somebody sitting there. But she, like, snapped at the old lady. So the old lady gets up, walks around, and she goes, and somebody in front of me had just stood up, so she was able to take that seat. Her mother waits for the little old lady to find another seat and then looks at her daughter and said, didn't apologize to the little old lady. So this was just for our benefit. It was so hypocritical. She says, don't do that. If a little old lady, or she called them grandma, she said, if a grandma comes over and wants to sit down, she said, you let them take that seat. Evidently, they didn't want anybody in their personal space, so they put a bottle on the seat, but there was actually nobody sitting with them. And so the mom waits for the little old lady to relocate and then scolds her child loud enough for everybody to hear. But she did it in a demeaning way. She said, if a grandma comes by here, she said, you make sure she can sit. Yeah, you say that after she relocates to another seat, you know. And it was just so distasteful to me. And I looked at the, you know, I looked at the woman who had sat in front of me. I just smiled at her like, well, what are you going to do? You know, people are people, you know. But it would have had more sincerity to me, number one, if she had stopped her and said, no, you can sit there, and looked at her daughter and said, what are you thinking? You know, or if she had apologized to the old lady, oh, I'm sorry you moved. I didn't realize what was going on. I'll talk to my kids or something. But it's like she was saying it for our benefit, but really didn't want that woman sitting near her kids. Or, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't a good lesson, and it was so hypocritical that it kind of offended me. She would have been better off just saying nothing, and she ended up saying it 3 or 4 times to her kids, almost like she wanted to make sure everybody around knew she didn't approve of that. But she didn't do the right thing. She never apologized to the lady, and she didn't tell her to sit down while she had the opportunity. So it was almost like she was trying to save face with, cause I think everybody looked at her daughter like, what is wrong with you? And the woman must have reacted to that because it took her too long to say anything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things, is that you have got to be, if that's the type of person you are, then at least own up to it. You know, don't be a hypocrite. And it's like more offensive to try to save face after the fact than just being a sincere person. You know, but the right thing at that point would have been, if she realized it too late, would have been to apologize to the woman that her daughter made move, and who did it in a very, very rude and brash way. And what the mother should have done is she should have made her daughter apologize to, you know, I didn't mean to speak to you like that. I'm sorry that I made you move, or something like that. So the mother really missed the mark on teaching her daughter a lesson. And what she was doing, obviously, was more to save her face for herself than teaching her daughter a lesson.
Well, too little, too late. We see a lot of that, a lot of that, and it's too bad. But you're right. A lot of unfortunate lessons come out of a situation like that. Like you said, the rudeness, it's also not, in my opinion, not really in good taste to chastise somebody. Even a child, 3 or 4 times in a public surrounding. I think that's supposed to be private. That's like, you know, my kids, if they misbehaved, even grandchildren, if they misbehaved in a restaurant or something, we'd say, sit down and behave yourself. And if they didn't, this is when they were like toddlers, right? And if they weren't good, me or grandpa or one of their parents took them outside.
Right,
and dealt with it outside, and then brought them back in the restaurant. It's, you know, there are some things, I guess, that if they're never practiced in a family, they're never learned, period. So,
woman was, she said, if a grandma or grandpa come in, make sure they can sit this time. Well, what if it's somebody who's 20 years old and has a bad back, and it hurts them to stand up? Why can't they sit down? You know, I mean, they were just holding that seat in the corner next to them. You know, there were like rows of 4 seats. So you would have 2 rows. So you'd have 8 people sitting in this little semicircle, and then the next group would be another 8, and then the next group another 8, you know. And it's like, so they had this seat in the corner, but it was literally standing room only. So the only person that she was telling her daughter that she had to pick up that bottle for was for an older person. And they called them grandma and grandpa, which I thought was insulting anyway. You know. If a person needs a seat, pick up the frickin' bottle. You know, I have just as much a right to sit down as somebody who's 20 years older than me, you know? So I just was distasteful to me.
Well, and I would agree with you. But again, you know, you never know what somebody's taught and how they grow up. So rolling your eyes, you do a lot of anymore when you're out in the public, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
It is what it is. But when we talk about you know, the reason I bring up a lot of this stuff is so that people understand that if they have young kids, there are some things that are incredibly important to the adjustment of your child when they're out there on their own, and that's one of them. Social graces and the ability to behave like a lady or a gentleman is important
right.
to all of us. So, but Monday's show, we, you know, we did that, the show about the boys that poured the stuff over the autistic young man's head, and there's been, I've seen the video several times. I've been told nothing of any kind of, you know, what ended up happening to these boys. I haven't heard anything. So hopefully this weekend I'll be able to find something so we can have an update to that, because when we hear something bad like that, I think everybody likes to know what happened. And if it's not all over the news, I know nobody knows about it, so we kind of have to search for it. The other thing that we talked about on Monday was the fact that those movie stars, I want to say, can't even think of the names of who they were, Jenny McCarthy and, the funny guy, I can't even think of his name. A lot of them raised money to make sure that the boys who did this get what they're supposed to get.
Right.
So Tuesday, we did a Bullies to Buddies Day, and we talked about all the things that have been happening in the NFL. And, boy, that's been a real mishmash of, I don't know whether the media gets the news too soon before it's really true, but one minute he's on, next minute he's off, next minute he's back going to play, next minute he's not going to play. So at this point in time, I didn't research this morning because I have another story that I want to tell everybody, but it's what the how? I mean, I've never seen a picture of the little boy. I can't assess it. Nobody cares whether I can or not. But when I listened to the manager of the team that he plays on, he said that they assessed the facts. They saw everything that they had, you know, the switch, the child, the everything, and deemed that it maybe had gotten out a little bit of control, but that it was purely his way of teaching his child a lesson, and that there was no abusive intent. And I thought to myself, geez, that's probably what everybody would say about their punishment of somebody, unless it's them being punished. So that didn't sit very well with me, but I also gave the benefit of the doubt and thought to myself, well, maybe they saw some facts and some information that the rest of us couldn't see that takes away some of the horrific news that was reported, that the child had cuts and bruises and all this kind of stuff. Maybe that part wasn't true. I don't know. But I do know that now, again, I heard last night he wasn't playing, and this morning it flashed over the screen that he's going to play. So who knows? But it is what it is. And Bullies to Buddies Day, we spent a lot of time talking about bullying coming from every corner. And Wednesday, we had a great show with Raphael, who is a good friend of mine who works for the Sun Sentinel. He's a reporter. And he covered my grandson's story from beginning to end. He sat beside me often in the courtroom during the trial. So he's a good guy and a caring guy. And like I said, he has these two little boys, and he has two adult daughters, or older daughters, not adults, but teenage daughters, that he's raising as well as these two little boys. So what was nice about the show was that he was very honest about everything, and he was, I think he felt as though he was not letting everybody know how much he loves this little boy. So during the end of the show, he said, you know, I'm talking about all the things that he does that are bad, but I want everybody to know what a joy he is too, and how much I love him, and how much he teaches us, and how much fun he is and everything, which I thought was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, then I get a message that I read to Shelley later from a listener who said that she loved the show, and she said that her son had been diagnosed with the same thing that they diagnosed Raphael's son with, and that, you know, it was behavioral, and there was this and there was that, and then autism spectrum and all these fancy words and everything. And she said, but he goes to a school where the teachers really care. He's a teenager now. And that's what she said about him. She said, he's so much fun. He's taught me so much. He's like such a wonderful addition to my life. And I read it to Shelley because it sounded, Raphael and our listener could have written this together. I mean, it was beautiful. And the feeling of, I don't know, the distraught feeling that they both had in the beginning, you could hear in their words as well. The fear of hearing any diagnosis after the birth of a child is with all of us. If you've ever given birth, I'm sure you know that. Do you want to know if it's a boy or a girl? I don't care if it's a boy or a girl. Just tell me that everything looks good. And then you can tell me whether it's a boy or a girl. I said that every time. And mm-hmm. I could usually see them because I watched them be born. But I would say, is everything, to, you know, he or she looks perfect to me. Are they perfect? Yes, Renee, they're perfect. Okay, is it a boy or a girl? So,
right.
You know, there's that feeling of, you're apprehensive after you give birth, even if you've had a perfectly normal pregnancy. So then to be born or have a child born that, you know, you wrap your arms around and fall totally in love with, and then as the learning stages start to happen, you note that something just doesn't seem right. It's very scary for a parent, very, very scary. And then to be given a diagnosis like both of these people were given, that's like so iffy. Well, does that mean my kid's in trouble, or does that mean he's going to grow out of this? What does that mean exactly? And you very often can't get a bona fide layman terms explanation for those kind of diagnoses. And I guess that's true for the rest of your life of anything that you do with a doctor in most cases, because I don't know why. You have to ask a lot of questions. And if you don't know how, as many people in my life don't, they take me with them. So,
well, the problem with conditions like ADHD, autism, and even some conditions like chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, there's no blood test for them. There's no brain scans. People think, like, when you diagnose somebody with bipolar, because I always used to think this until I started doing my research, all right, bipolar is a set of symptoms. There is no blood test. You know, people hear bipolar, so they think it means the brain chemistry is off. That's not what it means at all. Because there's no brain scan that says, oh, this person is bipolar. What it is that they've created labels. All these diagnoses are labels for a group of symptoms. So they don't go to the cause of what's creating it. And if they say, okay, if somebody has autism, they have blah, blah, blah symptoms. You know, they have these 10 symptoms. Well, your kid only has 6 of them, or your kid has 3 here, but then 5 others that aren't in their protocol, but that there's nothing in their books for yet. So then they give it this broad, you know, like non-specific, not mentioned elsewhere in our protocol, because he's got some of the autistic symptoms, but he doesn't have them all, but he's got other things, and we don't know what it is. So, you know, all it is labeling. It's labeling. And,
mm-hmm.
and it's
mm-hmm.
frustrating to me about that is that it really doesn't matter what label you give it. If you have diminished brain function, then what you do is you go to treatment centers that focus in on what the effect is of that, and you improve on it. So like blue-green algae, drinking alkalized water, there are certain types of, like this woman I talked about, Dr. Corinne Allen, she's been studying brain for 28 years. And she actually has a brain train center where she's taken kids with advanced autism and actually got their brains working where they were able to be more communicative. There's one girl that's got a testimonial video up on the website and stuff. You know, and she talks about how she can think more clearly and form sentences now and stuff. I mean, she's adorable. But it's that you can give these kids a more normal childhood, a more normal life, you know, as an adult, by bringing better functioning to their brain by doing things that are healthy to the brain, not through drugs. And this is what frustrates me, because once you've gotten a label through the medical establishment, like fibromyalgia, there is no blood test to say you have fibromyalgia. Fibromyalgia is a label when you go to the doctor and you have widespread pain all over your body that they can't figure out where it's coming from. So then they tell you you have fibromyalgia. They believe you that you have pain everywhere. They might even be able to put little sensors on your body and see that you have, like, pain receptors lighting up all over the place. But they don't know what's causing it. They don't understand that it's simply an inflammatory disease caused. It can be caused by allergies. It can be caused by stress. It can be caused by a poor diet. I had fibromyalgia for many years, and I don't have it now. And I never took any of these drugs that are out there for fibromyalgia. When I reduced my stress level and started eating better, it cleared up over a matter of a few years. But the bottom line is it completely cleared up. I also had chronic fatigue syndrome. You know, these are just labels. And the same thing goes with autism and mental illnesses. They're just labels. There's no blood tests to say this kid has autism. They're doing it based on a series of behavioral or advancement delays. They're not speaking well. And there's other ways of dealing with that. So I get frustrated with the labels, because then what it is that if they label them that way, they have a set protocol of dealing with it. And I don't think the protocols, in many cases through the medical establishment, bring about enough advances in the child's brain health.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I also, I would agree with all of that. We learned a lot about things like elusive health problems that are often brought on by so many other outside entities that it'd be impossible, to be honest with you, because each individual is an individual. But as far as my experience with autistic children, I did that for a while at Good Earth Farms and with the Magical Ponies. And I went from seeing a child that I had to keep eye contact with to keep his attention, and seeing that colors would catch his eye. So I worked with colors with him, and worked with him completely, and was able to find a way for he and I to become friends. Then on the other hand, I worked with some that I couldn't get eye contact with. One young boy I will never forget as long as I live. The only way Mom kept control of him was her older daughter, who was about 14, kept her arms around this child's waist the entire time. Mm-hmm. And that's how they kept him in control. And if she let go of him, you had no idea what the little boy was going to do. So the ladder of it's so encompassing, that autism, identification of autism is so huge, and so many different manifestations of it that I don't know how they can put one word on it. That's like, you know, saying kids, period, will do this, or mothers, period, will do this. This is even bigger than that.
And I think a lot of kids diagnosed with either ADHD or autism that maybe have food allergies or have something else going on, that if they cleared that up, the learning disability or the brain function would improve and they would no longer have that. And the reason I say that is because of what happened to my nephew. He was very angry. He had become almost non-communicative. This is when he was real little, and going back like 30 years ago. And he was almost non-communicative, very angry. If he got angry, he would just start banging his head. So in today's today's way of diagnosing, he would have probably been diagnosed with autism, all right? But what it was is that he had severe allergies to sugar. He had no sugar tolerance, and food dyes and preservatives. So my sister was very lucky to have a pediatrician that was really knowledgeable in nutrition, didn't really like medicine and prescription drugs and stuff, was really, really into nutrition, put my nephew on a clean diet, which was almost unheard of back then, you know. And within 2 weeks, he calmed down. He wasn't angry anymore. And now, you know, this is the guy that's in the Air Force. I mean, he grew up normal. He grew up with a brain that functioned. He's very intelligent. They actually found out that he has a very, very high IQ. But if we had not brought that under control, who's to say that developmentally, as the time went on, that his brain function would have gotten worse and worse and worse if the food allergies hadn't been brought under control, because his brain never would have developed properly. I mean, you've got to understand, the kids' brains are forming at this time in their life. So that's why I think more needs to be done with nutritional treatment of brain health, utilizing things that increase brain function, and then reevaluating the child, every year. Because I think a lot of kids that are diagnosed with these may have the symptoms, but not the pervasive condition. Some of them are lifelong conditions, and this is what the child is going to be dealing with, but I think a lot of kids aren't.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I do think that there's tremendous room for improvement with all of those, and like you said, because there's no blood test, it will probably never, ever be narrowed down to something that the public can actually work with or define for themselves. So it will always be an issue. But I loved having Raphael on the show, and I loved the share that came from one of our listeners that was so right on. I meant all week to call Raphael and let him know what wonderful feedback we got. Then Thursday, we talked about spousal abuse. We talked about the interviews that were done by Meredith Vieira and Robin Givens. Scary, scary, scary stuff.
Yes.
To me, I shared a story about my sister, and of course, through the years, I've seen a lot of unnecessary physical abuse, being given from one person to another, couples, siblings. Also, by the way, and parents and children also. I, having owned a bar for 2 years, it's not unusual to see brothers, of course, under the influence, but brothers can come fist to cuffs pretty easily, and so can fathers and sons. And it's never been my way of communicating. My kids will tell you, when they were young and got big to get their attention, I didn't yell. I'm not a yeller. I'd punch him in the side of the arm. Spike, to this day, says both arms are still sore from all the punches he got as a kid. They were not punches that would lay anybody out, but that was my way of getting their attention. I'd walk up and punch him in the arm. And, of course, right or wrong, that's what I did. That seemed to work for me, us, and get their attention. I don't ever remember really giving anybody what you call a whooping, and I certainly never used an object to hit my kids with. My hand, if they slap in their hand, or the hair pulling contest that I used to have with Mike when he was a little guy. And I have, actually Austin, when he would lie to me or do something that he knew was wrong, I'd say, give me your hand. He put his hand out and I'd slap his hand and slap him any place else. I didn't hit him in the butt. And it didn't hurt him. What it did was embarrass him. He didn't
right.
like it.
Right.
And right or wrong, those are the techniques that I developed for myself. I'm not somebody who can hurt somebody else, first of all.
Right.
I'm not.
Right.
And I've always been afraid that because I'm big and strong and a woman, that I could hurt somebody else. And I didn't ever want to do that. So, but I think when we talk about spousal abuse, the underlying issues are much deeper than just being mad at somebody or feeling like you have to fight back with somebody or feeling even like you have to protect yourself. I think there's a lot of issues going on with that. And if you're living in a house where somebody puts their hands on you, and it's not unusual for you to have to put makeup on your face, excuse me, or cover a bruise on your arm or your cheek or anything like that. I'm going to go in a sneezing fit. You're going to have to talk to somebody, please. And don't feel like, first of all, don't take responsibility for it. If somebody's mm-hmm. hitting you for whatever reasons, they're not supposed to hit you. Even if you think you didn't make a good dinner, even if you think you stayed at the mall too late, whatever. Well, I don't care what it is. If you are a grown-up and another grown-up is being violent with you, you need to talk to somebody, and the sooner the better. And, of course, we do have hotlines. They're in the front of any yellow page phone book you can find. As a matter of fact, we don't have a lot of phone numbers in a phone book anymore. It's kind of amusing. I just got mine, and I can remember when they were so big, it was a big thing for muscle men to rip a phone book in half. Do you remember that, Shelley?
Yes. Yep.
So now they're little, no matter where you live. And, of course, they've broken them down a little bit into townships and everything. But even still,
right.
A lot of people don't even have a house phone that's in the phone book. So most of them is business, and there is all kinds of toll-free numbers in the front of your yellow pages to call if you're in trouble. And worst-case scenario, if you're in trouble like that, at least talk to a friend. There must be a friend you have that you can talk to and work through. Mm-hmm. It's
there's
not
also
okay to live
911.com.
Like,
isn't there a lot of self-help on that website or that phone number?
Yes. Yeah, 211 will help anybody, and for whatever reason, children, adults, elderly, it doesn't really matter who they are. They will help anybody and take advantage, because that's no way to live. That's no way to live at all. So that brings me to a horrific story that took place, I want to say, yesterday, in Florida. A man yesterday afternoon went in and killed his daughter and then his 6 grandchildren, ranging in ages from 2 to 11, before he turned the gun on himself. Then a family or a friend, it's a little bit west of Gainesville, and came to the house and found the bodies of the 8 people. 51-year-old Don Charles Spirit is the shooter, the father of the mom, and all 6 of his grandchildren. Sarah was his daughter. She was 28, a 2-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 5-year-old, an 8-year-old, a 9-year-old, and an 11-year-old. And there is no real reason. There's no, nobody really knows why or what for. They do mention that the father had a criminal record, which could mean anything. Could mean that he's a bad driver. So I don't know what really, really happened, other than, I mean, I know what really happened, but I don't know why. They're not giving any reasons. They're not giving any background, probably because they don't know anything yet. But
did they say whether or not there was any kind of a letter or anything, or did this appear to be a spontaneous act?
Yes. Well, spontaneous in the fact that nobody was aware that they're reporting that there was any even kind of issues going on within the family, but that doesn't mean anything. It just says that he walked into the house, killed his daughter, and then all six of her children with a gun, and then turned the gun on himself and took his own life. So they're calling it an apparent murder-suicide. And, I mean, you don't get much more horrific than that in my book. There must be other family members involved. As the day goes on, I'm sure we'll hear more about it. Often when we hear a story like this, the state that the shooter is in, often we find out later, and I'm not giving excuses, I'm just, for the sake of conversation, believes that they're doing something righteous for people that they love. Don't know where that emotion comes from, because I just can't wrap my brain around it, but I do know that in many circumstances, even in some cases where the shooter has survived, has been put on life support and comes back. I can't remember the famous story about that, but I have been told that often when they come back around, they say, you know, this is a horrible world. And, of course, there's mental illness is often involved. So I don't know.
But a Law and Order episode, you might even have seen this one. There was a guy, the term was family annihilator. And it's, I don't know if this guy had that, but I'm just saying there was an episode where a guy killed his entire family because he had lost his job and he was doing very bad financially. And he had such an absurd view of his importance to the family dynamic that he felt if he had any kind of downfall, like losing his job or whatever, that his family would not be able to survive it. So he saw killing his wife and his kids as a merciful act so that they wouldn't
yep.
have to go through the humiliation of dealing with what just happened to him. I mean, really,
mm-hmm.
really off. I mean, obviously that's like that the brain's not working right or the mind's not working right for you to feel that way, but they've actually, evidently it's happened more than once because they actually have a term for it, so that's a very disturbing fact. But it's called a family annihilator. Now, I don't know if that's the situation with this guy, but you know, when you've heard these stories before, that's one of the situations that creates it, and it is a form of mental illness that these people have a have an absurdly overblown view of their role in the family dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, I mean, God knows what goes through somebody's mind. Let's face it. Especially if somebody is in trouble with some kind of dementia or mental disorder or malfunction or drugs, for that matter. I don't know. I really don't know what any kind. I can't think of a reason. But I also read the story of that woman, I read it again the other day, the one that, I can see her face and I can't think of her name, who said a black man stole her car, hijacked her car, and her two little boys were in it, but she really drove it into the lake and drowned her boys. You remember what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Was that Susan?
And, yeah, Susan something.
Yeah.
But you have to wonder, you know, and now there's a big story about her having, being in trouble even in prison and having stuff going on in her life. So who knows? Who knows? I mean, you know, I don't know. All I know is that now, you know, six kids that have never probably done anything bad to anybody are gone with their mom. That doesn't say anything about a dad or any other family members as yet, but by Monday, maybe I'll have some other stuff going on. We'll see what happens, and I'll report it.
Where did this happen? Was this Florida?
Yeah, 30 miles, I think it said 30 miles east of Gainesville, or west of Gainesville. It'd probably have to be west of Gainesville. But, yeah. So, I don't know. But it's horribly sad, and it makes you feel grateful that, you know, there's nobody like that in your life right now that is so out of control. They show a picture of him on the news. He's a rugged-looking, it looks like a rugged-looking working man to me, would be my initial evaluation of it. So my heart goes out to the survivors of those eight people, and hopefully there's a way that they can get through this. I don't know what it would be, but hopefully there is. So that kind of recaps the week. But I want to remind everybody that on Monday we are going to talk about this organization that I got in the snail mail, no less, called Lauren's Kids, and it's preventing child abuse, mostly sexual child abuse. It is very important that we talk about this. It's very important that we talk about what you teach your children about sex. It's very important that we talk about playing doctor. It's very important that we talk about all of this stuff, because of late, many things have come to my attention that kind of blow me away, that adults. I had an adult tell me the other day that a seven-year-old was having sex with her five-year-old daughter. And I said, that's almost impossible. What do you mean by that? Well, you know. And I said, I don't know. Having sex means to fornicate. I said, is that what you're talking about? She didn't even know what that word was.
Okay.
And so I realized that in some circles, sex is still taboo. I mean, they're doing it, but they don't know anything about it.
Right.
So, and when they're raising children, nobody has ever talked to them about the fact that boys and girls are probably the first group that you don't want to leave together in a tent unchaperoned by the time they're five.
Mm-hmm.
And even girls and girls and boys, because they're inquisitive and because they already have feelings and they already know that there's something involved with their body that sometimes is uncomfortable and sometimes is very pleasurable, and nobody's talking to them about it. So we have to talk about it, and we also have to talk about the fact that if someone has awakened that part of a child, you kind of want to know who it is. You know what I mean? You kind of have to search out and find out why at 3 or 4 years old a child is consumed with that. And it happens a lot. Sometimes it's purely by nature, but sometimes it isn't. So if you do have a whole bunch of little kids that you're watching and you're letting them go into a closed room and there's boys and girls, or a boy and a girl, or a boy and a boy, or a girl and a girl, you are opening a door that doesn't need to be opened yet. So we're going to talk about this on Monday. And if anybody has anything that they'd like to add to this, any experience, anything, we would love to hear from you, because I do think this is one of today's issues, early sexuality. Sex, there are days that I'm not ready to think about sex. And I'm almost 66. So if you're six, you sure as hell are not ready to think about sex, if you get my drift. So we'll talk about that. And shall anything, you know, you want to do a little research on that on the weekend, or even talk?
Yes, I am.
I mean, now you got nieces and nephews and everything that are young. I think every mom can share a story or two, and every individual can share a story or two if they're honest. And I'm not.
Yeah, and we've had issues
to...
with with my great niece having, you know, kids over and wanting to hang out in her room, and her mother doesn't allow them to close the door. So it's, you know, so she's already mindful of that. Not that they're not good kids, but she just doesn't want to open the door for that.
That's the whole point. That's the whole point. Because it's there, but it's dormant unless you arrange the opportunity. It's like a boyfriend
exactly.
and girlfriend who are 14, 15, 16, and they're not actively engaged in any kind of any kind of sex or even heavy foreplay or anything, and you leave them alone all the time, hey, it's only going to be a matter of seconds. Trust me.
That's
so,
right, because they're curious. It's all new
exactly.
territory to them.
Exactly. And it's pleasurable, and they know
mm-hmm.
it. So everybody have a great, great weekend, and we'll be back on Monday to have this discussion, and our hearts go out to the family in Gainesville, and I hope you're making it through this devastation. I'm sure it's difficult. We'll be thinking of all of you. And be back Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody. God bless. Bye-bye. Thanks, honey.
Bye, Renee. Bye, everyone. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll speak to you on Monday.